Jack watched the man disappear into the fog, the echo of his footsteps swallowed by mist and silence. He pulled the blood-stained handkerchief from his face, stared at the embroidered initials, RJJ, and muttered, "Dick," into the haze. Jack stared at the wet spots on the steps. The color was unmistakable, deep red, pooling in uneven blotches. His heart thumped once, hard. Blood? But then his nose caught something else. Not iron. Not copper. Sweet. Fruity. Synthetic. He leaned closer, squinting in the dim glow. The liquid had a syrupy sheen, clinging to the concrete like molasses. Jack sniffed once, then again. Cherry. Definitely cherry. He exhaled, half laughing through the pain in his nose. Not blood, he muttered. Slushy. The steel door creaked slightly, still ajar. Jack pushed it open a few inches and peeked inside. The back hallway was dim, lined with crates and a mop bucket. No bodies. No chaos. Just Julius, halfway down the corridor, bent over a trash bin with a mop in one hand and a half-empty big gulp cup in the other. Yo, Julius called without turning. Sorry about the mess. Dropped my drink when the damn mop slipped. Jack blinked. Cherry? Cherry Coke. Extra syrup. You know how it is. Jack nodded with a sigh of relief. The door was open. Yeah, I was talking out the trash. Didn't think anyone'd be creeping through the alley at this late. Jack stepped back out, letting the door swing shut behind him. He glanced once more at the sticky red puddle and shook his head. Cherry Coke, he said again, like it was a punchline. Jack stood under the weak alley light, nose still pulsing, his coat damp. He reached into his pocket and pulled out the Monte Cristo tube, the number 2. Sleek, brushed aluminum, just wide enough to cradle a secret. He unscrewed the cap, slid out the cigar, and held it in his palm for a moment. The wrapper was flawless, silky Connecticut leaf, light brown with a hint of gold. The band caught the light, cream, gold-trimmed, and that red M like a seal of perfection. He tucked the cigar into his breast pocket, just above the heart, then reached into the other pocket and pulled out the iron key. Cold and dangerous. He stared at it for a heartbeat, then slid it into the empty tube, screwed the cap tight, and returned it to his coat. The weight felt right now. Balanced. Jack reached into his coat pocket again and pulled out the second cigar, the one that hadn't been tucked away in the aluminum tube. He peeled back the waxy sleeve with care, then slid the band off gently, folding it once and slipping it into his pocket like a keepsake. He struck a match, shielding the flame with his hand against the wind. The tip of the Monte Cristo caught fire slowly, the leaf darkening as he rotated it, puffing slowly to get an even burn. He drew in, slow and deliberate, letting the heat settle and the flavor fill his cheeks. The first pull was warm, earthy, with a whisper of cedar and a trace of toasted almond. He exhaled through his nose, the smoke curling into the fog like a dragon in a medieval tale. Jack flipped up his collar and started walking. 32 minutes to the Capitol Hilton. Just enough time to finish the cigar and think about everything that hadn't made sense. Yet? He walked, boots steady on the wet pavement, the Monte Cristo burning slow and even between his fingers. The fog clung low, swallowing headlights and softening the edges of the city, but his mind was sharp, too sharp. The kind of sharp that only shows up when the adrenaline wears off and the fear settles in behind it. Everything that hadn't made sense started lining up like suspects in a bad precinct hallway. Lisa. The bartender. The doorman. The elevator that opened before he touched the button. The bourbon in his room. The note. None of it was coincidence. Not in this town. Not with these stakes. His military instincts, the ones he'd spent years trying to drown in bourbon and busy work, kicked in whether he wanted them to or not. Pattern recognition. Situational awareness. The quiet hum of danger that lived in the back of his skull like an old injury. Someone had eyes on him. Someone had a plan for him. Someone had been planning it for a while. He took another slow pull from the cigar, letting the smoke roll across his tongue. The flavor was warm, earthy, steady, the opposite of the knot tightening in his gut. Lisa calling him by name before he said it. The bartender doing the same. The kid in the smoke shop. The man in the alley. The investors knowing about the sealed file. Too many threads. Too many hands on the same puppet. And the iron key, the damn iron key, sitting in his pocket like a live grenade with the pin half pulled. 9 attempts left. 9 chances before the drive self-immolated and he went with it. He exhaled, watching the smoke twist into the fog. Someone was choreographing his night. Someone who knew his habits. Someone who knew his past. Someone who knew exactly how to push him toward the job without ever giving him a real choice. He wasn't just being followed. He was being handled. And the worst part? He didn't know by whom. Not yet. The city was quiet, still holding its breath. Jack moved south on 15th Street Northwest, boots steady on the wet pavement. The cigar settled into rhythm, each draw a slow meditation, each exhale a release. The smoke was rich, but not overpowering, with a creamy finish that lingered on the tongue. Hints of cocoa, maybe leather, maybe a memory. He passed the granite columns of the Treasury Annex, its windows dark, its flag limp in the mist. The White House fence loomed to his right, floodlights casting hard shadows across the lawn. A lone Secret Service SUV, a black Chevy Suburban with black-tinted windows, idled near the gate, engine humming, the driver staring through the windshield right at him. Jack didn't look over. He knew the drill. The fog had lifted a bit, but the city still felt like it was settling in for the night. Jack turned left on Pennsylvania Avenue, past the Willard's quiet facade. The ballroom renovation was still under wraps, plywood barriers, orange cones, a faint smell of sawdust and wet concrete. Somewhere behind the fencing, a radio played softly, half a verse of Can't Stop by Red Hot Chili Peppers, before fading into static. He kept moving, past the boarded-up storefronts near Freedom Plaza, where the only light came from a 24-hour CVS and the blue glow of a metro bus pulling away. A man in a hoodie leaned against a lamppost, scrolling his phone, the screen lighting up his face, and the Dutch master's blunt hanging from his lip. Jack nodded once. No reply. Just the smell of some pretty skunky weed. He turned north on 14th, then east on I Street. The pavement was slick, the air thick with exhaust, and the faint smell of stale fryer oil from a closed-up Five Guys. A rat darted across the sidewalk near Franklin Park, tail flicked, and disappeared behind a dumpster in the alley. Jack didn't flinch. The Hilton came into view, 16th and K, clean lines, corporate hush. A doorman stood inside the vestibule, scrolling something on his phone, tie loosened, jacket off. Jack paused at the curb, took one last draw from the cigar, and let the smoke drift upward, past the street lamp, into the fog. The Monte Cristo tube felt heavier now, like it knew what it was carrying. He stepped inside. The lobby was warmer than he remembered. The clerk gave him the same nod, the same smile. Jack didn't return it. Elevator ride, silent. His room was untouched. The bourbon bottle sat where he'd left it, Pappy Van Winkle's family reserve, 15-year, still calling his name like Odysseus and the sirens. The note, 30 days. Starting now, Jack shrugged. Remained folded, just as he'd left it. Jack sat at the desk, opened his laptop, and began to dig. Public records. Shell companies. Blockchain ledgers. He traced Hollis Holdings through Panama, Zurich, and the Caymans. He found a subnetwork of wallets tied to Moses' campaign donors, anonymous, encrypted, and suspiciously active. By 4 a.m., he had a map. By 5, he had a theory. By 8 a.m., he had nothing but questions. He closed the laptop, poured a splash of Pappy Van Winkle, and stared at the iron key. Then the TV lit up. Senator George H. Moses. Out on bail and heading to Capitol Hill. Jack grabbed his coat. He opened the Uber app. Driver arriving, Lisa. ETA, 3 minutes. Jack didn't flinch this time. He just smiled. The Tesla pulled up smoothly, headlights slicing through the morning haze. Jack slid into the back seat. The leather was warm. The air freshener still swung gently. Lisa glanced in the mirror. Third time's a charm. Jack raised an eyebrow. Stars must be in line. Lisa smiled. Or someone's playing chess. Jack chuckled. I'm more of a crossword guy. She didn't reply. Just drove. They passed the monuments again, the marble facades, the buildings that held secrets and traded them like currency. Jack watched the city wake up, joggers, aides, lobbyists in tailored suits. He glanced at the dashboard. Still no GPS. Just music. Dylan again. You're gonna make me lonesome when you go. Jack leaned back. You always drive this car? Lisa nodded. It's not mine. But it's mine today. Jack didn't push. He just watched the streets blur past. As they pulled up to the Russell Senate office building, Moses was stepping out of a black SUV, flanked by staffers and cameras. Jack watched Moses stride through the marble threshold as he'd paid for the building himself. No hesitation, no glance back. He took the stairs to the third floor, a classic move. Elevators were for solo acts. Moses had a media entourage to shepherd, cameramen, sound techs, a PBS producer in sensible shoes, and the MSNBC guy with the Rasta hat, already adjusting his tripod like he'd been summoned by prophecy. Upstairs, the rotunda's third floor walkway pulsed with light and tension. The dome arched overhead like a cathedral ceiling, echoing with the low hum of broadcast gear and whispered strategy. Flags flanked the press zone, two American, one state, one symbolic, depending on the day. The marble floor had been taped off into invisible lanes, one for reporters, one for senators, one for the lawyers who looked like they'd slept in their suits and woke up mid-subpoena. Moses stood at the mic bank, backlit by the dome skylight, flanked by counsel and conviction. His voice carried. His posture said, I'm not here to explain, I'm here to declare. Jack didn't linger. He turned toward the gold elevator, the one that always looked like it should lead to a speakeasy or a secret vote. Moses entered. Jack didn't. Instead, Jack crossed the rotunda's echo chamber, passed the Fox News setup with its cold lighting and clipped tones, and slipped into the first office on the left. No cameras. No flags. Just the quiet hum of a desk lamp and the sound of a TV on low volume mounted to the wall. The reception area smelled like maple and ambition. Flags lined the walls, American, New Hampshire, and the bold black and white Live Free or Die banner. Beneath the state seal, etched in brass, Vis Unita Fortior. A united force is stronger. Jack smiled. The irony wasn't lost on him. The receptionist looked up. Can I help you? Jack nodded. Just visiting. From Keene. Wanted to thank the senator for something he said in a hearing last year. The receptionist smiled. Digital privacy? Jack nodded. Exactly. Well, here, write down your name and number, and I'll give it to him and see if he can get back to you, as he slipped a notepad and pen on the counter. Two men who sat near the window looked over at Jack. Lobbyists. Crypto guys. One wore a navy suit with a subtle pinstripe. The other had a leather folder embossed with a snake eating its own tail. Jack froze. The Ouroboros. Ouroboros is a provably secure proof-of-stake protocol that's powering Hollis Holdings' blockchain. But I see it as what they really are, a corporate predator. He walked over casually. Nice emblem, he said, nodding toward the folder. The man looked up. Excuse me. Your folder, Jack said. Interesting design. The man glanced down, then back at Jack. It's just a logo. Jack nodded. Sure it is. The other man, Asian, early 40s, sharp suit, sharper eyes, smiled faintly. You in crypto? Jack shrugged. I dabble. The man chuckled. Everyone dabbles. Until they lose their shirt. Jack smiled. Or find someone else's. The man's eyes narrowed. You from the hill? Keen, Jack said. Just visiting. The man nodded, then leaned toward his colleague. We should get moving. Meeting at Hollis in an hour. Jack's ears perked. Hollis. Again. They stood and started gathering their things. Jack turned back to the desk. Busy day, he said. The receptionist nodded. Always is when the senator's in the news. Then the inner office door opened. She stepped out. Tall. Dark hair pulled into a French twist. black heels that clicked with every step. A tailored navy suit with a thin pinstripe and a silk blouse the color of wet steel. She moved like she'd been in this long enough to know where all the bodies were buried and how to dress to make sure no one's attention would be on them. Vivian Marlowe, Chief of Staff. She didn't glance around. She went straight to the lobbyists. Gentlemen, she said, voice smooth but clipped. The senator will meet you as scheduled. He's reviewing the latest language on the digital asset clause. If you have revisions, I need them by Monday. The man with the folder nodded. There's a new exemption for custodial wallets. SEC's been sniffing around, but we're ahead of it. Marlowe tilted her head. Is it tight? The man leaned in slightly. Tight enough to satisfy compliance. Flexible enough to keep our capital mobile. She smiled faintly. That's what I like to hear. She turned toward the receptionist, reaching for a folder on the desk. And that's when she saw him. Jack. Standing, looking at the TV. Trying not to look like he was listening. Her eyes lit up. Jack Kemp. Jack froze. She stepped forward, a grin blooming across her face. I knew it. You haven't changed. Jack smiled back. Marlowe. She laughed. And you look like you're still chasing ghosts. Jack shrugged. She nodded. Back when I was an intern and you were ghostwriting for Congressman Laird. Jack chuckled. You were the only intern who quoted James Baldwin and brought bourbon to staff meetings. She laughed. And you were the only ghostwriter who edited speeches in iambic pentameter. Jack shrugged. I had a phase. She stepped closer. What brings you here? Jack gestured toward the maple candy bowl. I heard they were free. She raised an eyebrow. That's your story? Jack nodded. And I'm sticking to it. She smiled. Still chasing puzzles? Jack didn't answer. She didn't push. They talked for a few minutes, catching up, trading stories, skipping the parts that mattered. She told him how she'd gone from intern to chief of staff. Jack told her he was freelancing, consulting, dabbling. Neither believed the other. As Jack turned to leave, she put her hand on his arm and, with the other hand, gave him her business card that has my direct number. Call me. We need to catch up. He turned and said, I'll do just that. We have 20 years to catch up on. It's been too long, as his hand lingered a moment longer than comfortable before he let it go. Jack turned and left down the hallway. The receptionist handed Marlowe a slip of paper. Your friend left this, he said. Marlowe glanced at it. Name, John Maple. Number, 202-555-0199. She chuckled. Jack being Jack, she said. Always after puzzles. And apparently free candy. She folded the paper, tucked it into her pocket, and turned back toward the senator's office. Jack reached the bank of elevators at the end of the hall, thumbed open his phone, and tapped the Uber app. Driver arriving, Lisa. ETA, 3 minutes. He stared at the screen. Of course, it was Lisa.